Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
How do we keep focused on the divine and our spiritual path when we're surrounded by so much Maya and so much Leela, so many falsehoods? It's almost as though we are trying to fail, trying to stay separate from God and from each other. Okay. Well, first we have to clarify some of the Sanskrit terms. Leela means the divine drama. We haven't created it, or at least not the part of us that we identify as us. Not our unconscious even, not our subconscious even. Leela is created by God. It's that drama by which all was one, nothing but God, and then one, an inseparable, unbroken, infinite one, became many, only to return to the one. And the question arises a lot, like, what is the point of this? I mean, if we're one with God, and we've always been one with God, then how in the world did we become two? That's the Leela. The Leela is that the divine created this creation, this Leela, this drama, in such a way that we would forget who we are, such that through the practice of sadhana, through the practice of meditation, we could start to re-remember. And it may sound like more than a divine drama, it may sound sort of nonsensical. And the only way that I understand it, the only explanation I've heard that makes any sense to me, because remember, of course, I'm a scientist at heart. And so for me, that which is deeply spiritual, if I'm going to believe it, has to either be something I've experienced personally, the presence of God, the love of God, the oneness of the universe, or something that actually makes sense to me from, you could say, a scientific or rational perspective. So the only explanation I've ever heard of this Leela, this one become two only to become one again, that makes sense to me, is if you think about your own relationships, and as I look out and I look at the age of most of you here, I realize chances are we don't have any very young people in the audience tonight, so chances are everyone here, well, maybe not you, but otherwise everyone else here has probably been in relationship, in some kind of a romantic relationship. If not a marriage, at least a coming together. And we do something very interesting in our relationships when they last a while. They begin in this great, you know, electric fireworks, volcanoes sort of experience. If they last, they then tend to get much more still and calm, as they should. But a lot of us have this need, in a way, for the drama. But it's deeper than just a superficial sort of addiction to drama. It's actually deep and meaningful. Because what you find we do is we create fights. And if you're really honest with yourself and deeply introspective, you'll find that a lot of times the fights that you've created, you don't really care about the content. It wasn't that important. But you created it because, on a subconscious level or even unconscious level, you wanted that experience, that passionate experience of making up after the fight. You knew you'd make up again. You knew it wouldn't be a very big fight. And when you make up again, when you've gone from one together close to two far in energy because you're fighting, and then you come back to one as you make up, that coming back together is so sweet and so beautiful that a lot of us are prepared to deal with the temporary conflict in order to again have that experience of two becoming one. And so the only explanation that I've heard of Leela that makes sense is that one. That not that God was bored, but that God wanted to have that experience. See, when you're all just one, when there's no division, no borders, no boundaries, no nothing. Well, yes, on the one hand, it's infinitely divine. But on the other hand, you don't have that experience of falling in love and then of coming together. And that God wanted to have that experience of coming back together, to experience that. And hence God created the Leela. So that's Leela. Maya, again, is not something we've done, but is the nature of the universe, which you can think of as a veil that comes, but think of it as like a very shiny, slivery, sort of glittery type of veil that comes and sweeps itself over us, you know. And in that allure, in that glamorous allure of getting that veil of Maya wrapped around us, we've gotten pulled in, but now we can't see. So Maya is the illusion that we are the physical bodies, that we are this body, its size, its shape, its color, its bank account, its roles, its relationships. And then Maya is what leads to suffering, because if I am this body, well, obviously it's never going to be as beautiful as I'd like it to be. It's never going to be as rich as I'd like it to be. It's never going to be as popular as I'd like it to be. And so we're always yearning for more. We get greed, we get lust, and we're always going to try to push away things that aren't in alignment with me having all. And so we push away that which is uncomfortable, that which we don't want to see, those who may be obstacles on our path. We get what we call rag and dvesh, means likes and dislikes, things I'm pulling toward me, the gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it, and the aversions. Get it away, get it away, get it away. But all of that is Maya. Because Maya is that which convinces us that we are just this body. So we better keep running. We better make the most amount of money. We better become the highest in our career. Better push everybody out of the way. And it leads to all of that suffering. Constant jealousy, competition, bad-mouthing, negativity, dissatisfaction, despair. So those are the terms. Now let me go back to the original question here. How do we keep focused on the divine and our spiritual path when we're surrounded by so much Maya and Leela? It's almost as though we're trying to fail, trying to stay separate from God and from each other. So we're not trying to do that. It's not our fault. Part of the human package with Maya is that we don't remember who we are. There's a beautiful parable from our scriptures in which that which is most precious, which is the awareness of who we are, that there's this big debate and discussion about where to hide the precious treasure from these new creatures, the humans, where to hide it so that they won't find it. Or so they'll really have to spend a lot of time looking. Big debate, big argument. And finally, it gets agreed upon that the best place to hide it is within themselves. Because they'll never turn inward and look inside. So we're not trying to be separate. But part of our package deal as humans is that the truth of who we are has been hidden inside of ourselves. We've been wrapped in Maya, convincing us that we should focus outside, in the shopping centers, in the windows, in the careers, in the glitter and the gold. And so we stay separate. And the best way to focus on God is very simple. Go within. I've just told you the secret. It's very kind in the scriptures. They give us the whole story. It's not like a mystery novel. You have to wait till the end to find out. They give you the whole story from the beginning. So we know, it's hidden within us. So there's the answer. We go within. And it doesn't mean that we don't live wonderful, enjoyable lives. We do. In love, in service, in oneness, in joy, in celebration of this amazing creation. We smell flowers. We watch the sunset and the sunrise. We bathe in Ganga. We drink beautiful, cool water and hot tea and listen to the sound of chanting or the sound of classical music or the sound of water. We love the creation. And we live with compassion through recognizing that just as my truth is hidden in here, so your truth is hidden in there, and yours is hidden in there. And once you start to be able to see your own truth, you start to be able to recognize it in others. When you see that divine in you, you see it in all because it's the same. There's not like a Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati divine that's separate from the divine in each of you. It's one divine. It manifests a certain way in me because I'm in a specific vehicle. It's like the sun shines on all of these different glasses and bottles and bowls of different sizes and shapes and colors with different amount of water in each of them. So you're going to get a different reflection. But it's the same sun. And so we go within. We do what our scriptures, our sages, our saints, our rishis, our yogis have been telling us. Go within. Go within. Go within. God is there. It's like my favorite story of the man who's running all over the place looking for God, panicked and desperate. He's not feeling God, not experiencing God. Finally, he collapses under a tree on the banks of a river. He says, forget it. And at that moment, a fish jumps up out of the river. And the fish starts flopping around in the air. The fish is saying, water, water, water. I need water or I'm going to die. And the man says, you silly fish. Go back in the water. You just came from the water. You were in the water, surrounded by water. Nothing but water. If you would stop flapping around in the air and go back in the water, you'd have all the water you need. And the fish, this is what I love about stories. Fish talk, they flap in the air and they give lectures. So the fish stops flapping in the air and turns to the man and says, ah, and you are doing the same thing. You're flapping around here yelling for God. But you are living in God. There is nothing but God. And God is in you. The water is not even in me. I'm just in the water. But God is in you. Stop flapping around and go back inside.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
Yeah, one of the things we know, both from psychology and also from the cycle of karma, is that we're going to keep having the same patterns and the same experiences until we actually learn the lesson. That the universe is just going to keep giving us over and over again the same situations until we learn or until we heal. And it sounds like in your childhood, there was lack. And whenever there's lack, whether it's lack on a logistic level, lack of money, or whether it's lack on a level of love, the ability to trust, to know that when I turn back around, mom or dad will still be there. When I wake up in the morning, they will still be there. When I come home from school, they will be there. Whatever the lack may be, what we do is we try to fill it. And there's nothing to feel like you're doing wrong about that. That's very natural. That's actually your inner psyche's way of taking care of itself. What you needed, you weren't given. At that age, you couldn't give it to yourself. So you grew with a bit of pain. We all have it. We've all had damage done to us in different ways. And in your case, this was the pain. And so as you get a little bit bigger, the you decides, I'm going to fix this. We are lacking, I will fill it. And that's actually beautiful. It's not wrong. The intention is beautiful. A lot of people in your case fill it with alcohol, with drugs, with food, with sex, with possessions. That inner sense of lack, of emptiness, of insecurity, we fill in a variety of different ways that do not actually serve the purpose. But that doesn't mean that we are at fault. The instinct is a good one. I always say alcoholism, drug addictions, they're actually spiritual quests gone awry. The instinct is actually a spiritual one. But it's just gone awry because it's not working. So in your case, you've developed this ability, I will make myself secure. I will have a job. I will have an apartment. I will fill it with possessions. I will make sure that there is no lack. And the universe's message and your own very deep psychic message is that the answer to the fear of not enoughness isn't to create what you think is enough. It's to be able to sit in the experience of not enoughness, knowing that actually who you are is overflowing. That who you are is full. You were here last night, right? When we were talking to the young girl about infinity, right? That mantra of Purnamada. So that experience of infinite fullness, what we call Purna. So the real lesson is not, oh, I didn't have, therefore now I will have. It's, I didn't have, and I was scared. I hurt. Now I realize that even without having, there is nothing to be afraid of. And that's the message. And once you learn that message, you will be able to have as much as you bring into your world, because there will no longer need to be a lesson in it. But see, the universe has a much higher agenda for you than an apartment full of possessions or a secure job. It's going to keep throwing you experiences, challenges, to make you learn what you're supposed to learn, which in your case is, I'm okay. We're actually okay over here. Lost my job, all right. But here I am, still okay. All right, no apartment, no possessions. Here we are. We're okay. And when you really are able to have that we're okay experience, then have the apartment, no problem. Because you don't need it. Have the job, no problem. You don't need it to feel okay inside. And so you should start in your meditative practice, allowing yourself to drop into what we call the void. That place that begins by feeling like nothingness, but ultimately brings us into an experience of everythingness. It's an awareness of, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm clearly not my job because I just lost it. I'm clearly not my apartment, I'm locked out of it. Clearly not my possessions, I can't touch any of them. And an experience of dropping into that, I am nothing. And as you drop and as you drop and as you drop, you keep saying to yourself, we're okay. We're okay. Because the ego is going to be like, ah! And it's going to say, I got a better idea. Let's go have some chocolate cake. Oh, there's this movie on TV I really want to see. And you just keep telling it, we're okay. We're okay. Yeah, we're nothing. And we're okay. Yeah, we're nothing. And we're okay. And as you drop and you drop and you drop, sort of the floor, the ground of the nothingness opens up. Like you can't go deeper. You've hit that spiritual bottom, and the ground opens up. And you realize that actually, you're everything. But you have to go through the nothingness to hit the everythingness.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip, with the heel of a boot, shows the animal exactly who's the boss. don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
So routine is really important. Now, if God is everywhere and God is on 24/7 and we are one with God 24/7, then of course the question becomes, well, why Brahma Muhurt? Why get up early? Why meditate? Why do anything at a certain time if God is always there and we're always one with God? It's not that we need a routine for God. It's that when we don't have a routine and we sit to meditate, most of us notice that if you're meditating for the first time in a while, it's a lot harder to get there. It takes a lot longer to still the mind. It takes a lot longer to experience that oneness. Our minds are creatures of habit. So if every morning you get up and you have a cup of tea or you have a cup of coffee at 6:30, 7, 8, 9, whatever time you have it, you'll notice that about 5-10 minutes before you have it, the mind starts going, ah, my coffee is coming, my tea is coming. And if for whatever reason it doesn't come on time or you can't have it, the mind is very restless. So we're creatures of habit. Or if you've got a habit of getting up in the morning and first thing you open your WhatsApp or you open your Facebook or whatever your habit may be, and you get up in the morning and your phone battery is dead or Facebook is down or whatever it may be, you're very restless. Not just because you can't have a cup of coffee or get online, but because it has disrupted your routine. The mind is set in a certain way. You disrupt it, and it gets very upset. Now, when we develop a routine of prayer, of japa, of meditation, of yoga, of exercise, of being with loved ones, of taking a walk, whatever we put into our routine, it actually gets a lot easier to follow as the days go by because the mind gets set into it. And anybody who's tried to develop a meditation practice knows it's a struggle in the beginning. Not only in the beginning, but especially in the beginning, because all of our instincts are pushing against it. If we have it in the morning, the mind is like, oh my God, I've got to sleep. If we have it a little bit later, the mind is like, oh my God, I've got too much to do. So the mind is always pushing against it. And so if you can get it into a routine, the mind will open and expand to create space now. Oh, this is the routine. And the mind will settle around the routine such that that resistance is no longer there. The mind knows, ah, this is what we do. Every time we sit to meditate, there's an element of clearing away that which is not self, whether through a very specific practice of a niti-niti meditation technique, or whether through just a few moments of anchoring and grounding. But the more infrequently we do it, the more haphazardly we do it, the more those layers of ignorance have time to grow. It's like, it's the same reason that we tend to, you know, clean up once a day, you sweep the floor once a day, you know, clean your table once a day, at least. Because if you don't, then by the time you go in to clean it, there's a lot of dust. And if you can just keep it clean, a quick sweep of it makes it so much easier to live with. And our mind is the same. If you only clear through the muck haphazardly, you're going to find yourself living in a lot of muck. It's like anybody here have a swimming pool? Anybody? Swimming pool? Okay, a few people. If you have a swimming pool, what you know is that on the swimming pool, you get these layers of muck that have to be cleaned off. And if you wait too long to clean them off, the swimming pool becomes gross to swim in. So we go in and they clean it frequently so that it stays clean. It's the same with the mind. If we're not cleaning it frequently, removing that which is not self, when we go in to pray or meditate, the mind is full of muck. So, and as far as the best routine, is really just one you can follow. If you set a routine that you're not going to be able to follow, it doesn't matter how good it looks on paper. If you can't do it, it's not a good routine. So if you tend to be someone who's used to waking up at 8, 8:30, 9 o'clock, don't set a routine immediately for getting up at 4. You're just setting yourself up for failure. And then once you miss your getting up time, then the whole routine that you've set up, it's like a bag of dominoes. It's like if you're on a diet and you say, okay, no more sugar. And then you have one cookie. What happens? Anybody ever stop at one cookie? The only people who stop with one cookie are people who are not on diets. It's very ironic. Not on diets, one cookie, no problem. Great. On a diet, one cookie, the mind goes, well, I've ruined today anyway. I might as well eat the whole bag. We'll start again tomorrow. And this is what happens with our routine. So if you set up something that says 4 a.m. and you snooze, and you go back to sleep for a few hours, the mind is going to say, today is ruined anyway. Tomorrow, 4 a.m. Instead, set it at a reasonable time. Set it at 6. 6:30 if 6 seems too daunting. Do that for a few weeks or a month. Then set it half an hour earlier. Give it a few weeks. Set it half an hour earlier. You want to begin your morning, or I should say for me, I begin my morning with a gratitude practice. Before I even get out of bed. Literally, this is my lying in bed practice. Just 5 things. Sometimes the mind keeps going and it's more than 5, but at least 5 things that you are grateful for. 5 things. They may be new and creative each day, maybe the same each day, it doesn't matter. As long as you feel them in your heart. Did your eyes open? Can you see out of them? Are your legs able to stand and carry you? Do you have water running out of a tap that you can turn on? Is there someone somewhere in the world, maybe in your bed, maybe in your home, maybe thousands of miles away, who you love and who loves you and who sees you? Are you free to worship, to love, however you want? I mean, I'm just throwing out some very general ones. If you've got those, you are more blessed, luckier than 99% of people in the world. So gratitude. And then after gratitude, and after you finish your morning, you know, shower, brushing, whatever, prayer and meditation. Do some pranayama, it centers you. Do some japa, some chanting of a mantra. And then meditation. And I do it in that order because it helps the mind come in. The pranayama, then the japa. They lead so seamlessly into meditation that it's just like 1 minute you're doing your pranayama, the next minute you're chanting your mantra. And then you're just automatically meditating. And then at some point in the day, maybe first thing in the morning, maybe later in the day, work in some kind of practice for your body. Yoga, walking, some other exercise. Keeping the body healthy and strong. At night before you sleep, again, gratitude practice. Some meditation and then gratitude, or gratitude then meditation, either way. But just ending the day again with how blessed you are. And you'll find that it transforms you. It's transformed me. And obviously in the routine, you want there to be flexibility. Not enough flexibility that the mind is like, oh, I don't know, today, maybe, maybe not. But flexibility in that, there are nights you're awake really, really, really late for some reason, that you may need a little bit more sleep, no problem. Be flexible. But be flexible in the way that you stay with the routine even if a little bit of it got off. So okay, maybe you got up at 6:30 or 7 instead of earlier. But whenever you get up, start with your gratitude and your meditation whenever it is. So keep the routine even if pieces of it get knocked off. Early morning flight, no problem. Meditate on the plane. So this is how to bring that routine into our daily lives. And you'll see it transforms you.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
There have been some acts in the past by the people in the past which led to certain consequences. And then I noticed a pattern that all those people who do those acts, the consequences are the same. So right now, presently in my life, if a person is doing similar acts, I jump to the conclusion that this is what is going to happen in the end. So I want to save myself from that tedious journey and just end that relationship right here, because I don't want to reach that conclusion. So how just is it to judge your present relationships based on your past traumas or past learnings? Because everybody tells me that this is not right. You are you and this is this person. You are not that person in the past. This person is not that person in the past. But I feel that it's also, I cannot totally ignore what I have learned from the past. So how much is it just and unjust? I sometimes get confused.
I'm less worried about the justice of it. And I'm more concerned about your heart being open or closed. When we get hurt, what we tend to do is our heart closes. And then we become very skeptical of everyone. So one person hurts us and we start to sort of see the world through those eyes. Now, on the one hand, some of it is helpful. It teaches us something. If you were walking down the street and you got mugged, now when you walk down the street, you're going to be a lot more nervous. Not such a good thing. Hopefully you'll overcome that. But nonetheless, the lesson to be aware and careful is a very good lesson. You know, muggings can happen. So maybe now you are more aware. Maybe you don't go in certain areas. Maybe you don't go in certain times of the night. Maybe you've learned how to keep your money in a pocket rather than a purse or something, whatever it may be. You make decisions that are intelligent decisions based on experience you've had to protect yourself as much as you can from having the same thing happen again. But it doesn't mean you don't go out. Doesn't mean you don't walk the streets. Doesn't mean you never carry money. Doesn't mean that you're constantly terrified. You understand, yes, it happened. Yes, it could happen again. And not everyone out there is a mugger. The vast overwhelming majority of people are not muggers. And so just because I was mugged doesn't mean that I should start to see the world through the filter of people who are going to mug me. And that's the balance that you now need to find, is you take the lesson, how to be careful, what signs to look for. Is someone walking towards you a certain way? Are they looking at you a certain way? Did they cross the street to be next to you? You start to notice certain things, and that's good. But you walk down the street fearlessly. Because you know, I can't hide from the street. Got to get back out there. And the same thing is true in our relationships, whether it's friends, whether it's romance. People hurt us. People have hurt us in the past. People will likely hurt us in the future. It's the nature of what humans do to other humans, sadly. But you can't not open your heart. And so what you have to find, because there's no equation, I can't sit up here and give you the answer. You're going to need to find inside yourself, is the sign that I'm seeing something that could be very harmless, like someone crossing the street? I mean, for God's sakes, maybe they need to go into a store on the side of the street I'm walking in. Doesn't mean they're going to mug me. Not everyone who crosses the street is going to mug me. Just because the guy who did it crossed the street doesn't mean I have to pull out my, you know, can of pepper spray and spray everyone who crosses the street. So in the same way, you've got to ask yourself, as these signs appear that you've seen in the past, ask yourself, is this just like someone crossing the street? I mean, could someone with good intentions also do this action? Does this action definitely mean that this person is just going to hurt me? Or is it the sort of thing that actually good people also do? And if it's the sort of thing that good people also do, then don't break the relationship. Because then you could be cutting a lot of good people out of your life. But if it's something that you know is ominous, then take care of yourself. Use the lessons you learned in the past. Take care of yourself. But only you can answer that inside. And that's where you've got what Pooja Swamiji always calls our internal GPS. Trust it. Just because you were hurt once doesn't mean you can't trust yourself. Because that's also what happens to us when we get hurt, is we start to really distrust ourselves. We feel like, my God, I didn't know it was going to happen. Which means I'm not trustworthy. And then we start to doubt ourselves. Don't. Just because someone took advantage of you doesn't mean you're not trustworthy. In a way, it's almost better to be a little more siddha. You know, I mean, I know this on a personal example. Coming from America, I've been here now 25 years. But I'm very siddha. And I cannot tell you the number of times that someone will kind of take me for a ride, and I have no idea they've done it until, like, someone else, one of our guys, an Indian person, says, nee, dedious ka matlab nahi hai ye. And I had understood it totally differently. I had understood it in a very nice way, good-hearted way, truthful way, kind way. And they will say, nee, wo uska matlab nahi hai ye. Isliye wo keh rahe. And the truth is, I'm pretty smart. If I really wanted to develop the ability to pick out every single person who's pulling my leg, to pick out every single person who's telling some lie or inevitably who's going to end up, you know, doing the wrong thing, I probably could develop that skill if I had really tried. But I don't want to develop it. I don't want to move through the world suspiciously. I don't want to wonder when every single person is talking to me. Are they lying? I bet they're lying. Everybody lies. I don't want to think like that. I'd much rather be surprised and even a little bit hurt every time I find out someone has lied to me then develop the drishti that sees liars in honest people. But that's a personal choice. For me, having my heart open is critical. It's key for me. I would be much more worried about my heart being closed than about getting duped by someone who lied to me. That doesn't worry me nearly as much as closing my heart does. So yeah, you could get hurt again. But the gift of an open heart is the greatest gift. And you'll learn. You'll learn. You're young. You'll learn how to keep an open heart without becoming a doormat. Keeping your common sense, keeping your intuition, keeping your GPS on, but keeping your heart open.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.